I've got Bezu in the interrogation room.
What's the plan?
I'm going to give him the good cup, bad cup routine.
You are the soccer player known as Bezu?
Yes.
You were acquainted with Yves Gluant?
I'm glad he's pushing up daisies.
He is not pushing up daisies. He is dead.
It's an idiom.
You, sir, as an idiom.
Welcome to The Right Note, a podcast dedicated to the independent author.
From the craft of storytelling to the business side of publication, we cover it all.
I'm J. Ryan Fenzel.
And I'm Kira F. Jacobs.
And this is The Right Note. This episode is a horse of a different color as we explore the origins of our favorite idioms and expressions of speech.
Welcome back to The Right Note. Remember to join our community and follow us on Instagram at The Right Note Podcast. And if you like what you hear, post a nice comment about the show on podchaser.com.
Oh, and just to note, our cold open was a clip from Pink Panther starring Steve Martin from 2006. I remember you were obsessed with that movie.
Obsessed. Still one of my favorite movies. Have to go rewatch it.
I've got the DVD here. Topic of today's show are idioms, and idioms are fun, right, Kira?
Yes, they definitely are.
Well, they spice up our language and they pop up in conversation on an almost daily basis. But why do we say them and where do they come from? According to the Oxford English Dictionary, an idiom is a group of words established by usage as having a meaning not deducible from those of the individual words. Now that sounds like a very convoluted definition. But really what it means is like hot potato, bed of roses, and when pigs fly. They all mean things in a colloquial way, but you'd never be able to derive what they mean by the words themselves that make up the idiom.
Some are more obvious than others, but when I look at hot potato, bed of roses, and when pigs fly, I feel like bed of roses actually makes the least sense to me.
Yeah.
I actually don't know what that means. I can't lie.
Well, maybe one of us picked it on our
maybe our we did. I'll tell you who didn't.
Now is probably a good time to discuss the differences between idioms and metaphors, because I know that could get a little confusing for some folks. Like, what's a metaphor? What's an idiom? An idiom is an expression with a fixed meaning. And again, not derived from the words in the expression. But a metaphor, it's a comparison of two things that are not literally alike. So
idiom is not a comparison. A metaphor is.
Yes. And the metaphor, you can actually gain the meaning of it by reading the metaphor and you kind of understand it.
Yeah.
Like going back to bed of roses, I mean, what does that mean, right? So there's a grammatical difference there. But many of our most common idioms have very old origins, such that there's no one around anymore who remembers what the expression might have really meant when it originally was used. I mean, a lot of these go way back to medieval times, you know, and they just hung on and it kept going on generation and generation. And to me, that says a lot about how verbal our culture is in communicating and how it's not always writing that transfers knowledge from generation to generation. It's something as simple as talking and common expressions, you know? And I think that's pretty amazing.
Yes, I agree. I think that's why stories get passed on from, you know, so long ago into now. Like when you have nothing else to do, when you're hanging out with people, you talk. And so what is carried down through generations lasts for a long time because you're never going to not talk.
Even today, it's a big thing that happens in our, you know, just the way we communicate. So like at work, right? An engineering job on a production line. And there's a way to build this device at a station, let's say. And there's a set of instructions on how to do it. And it's written down, but it's very rarely ever looked at. It's always verbally taught. But then, like, as people get familiar with the job, they learn little tricks. And they'll just tell people these tricks, right? And what they call it at work, they call it tribal knowledge, because it's not documented anywhere. And that's tribal knowledge. I mean, going back hundreds of years, that's how it was done. So it's still very, very alive today, transferring knowledge just through verbal communication.
Is tribal knowledge an idiom? I feel like it is.
It just might be. We'd have to look that one
If you
up,
were
though.
just to say, oh, that's tribal knowledge, that's just knowledge that's always been known, you know, everyone knows that. I think that's an idiom.
Well, we're gonna have to look it up
It
because that's not on
could
my
be, I
list
don't
either.
know.
But before we get into the deep end with idioms, we're going to take a sidebar with Characters King.
So, to preface our Character is King segment this week, I'm going to read off of the Merriam-Webster's third definition of idioms, which is a style or form of artistic expression that is characteristic of an individual, a period or movement, or a medium or instrument. So, this month we are picking out favorite characters of ours who has a trademark catchphrase or is known by his or her use of a clever idiom. Would you like to go first?
I think after all that, I would like to go first.
Great, wonderful.
My
Please take it away.
pick this month for Characters King, I guess it's the idiom edition, is Doc Holliday, played by Val Kilmer in the movie Tombstone in 1993. Have you ever seen Tombstone?
No, I have. Hayden made me watch it.
Oh, it's one of the great classic
It
westerns.
was fine. I don't love Westerns, but to each his own.
Well, it's about Wyatt Earp and the OK Corral legend and that whole thing, but it goes a little deeper into it, with what he did after the OK Corral. But the guy who wrote it, his name is Kevin Jarre, and he researched like old newspapers and letters and everything he can find from back then to kind of get a feel for how people talked and communicated. And that's what kind of made his dialogue in the film so unique and authentic. I mean, if you want to watch a Western with like what I feel is really cool period appropriate dialogue, you'd watch Tombstone. And another one, by the way, would be True Grit with John Wayne. That's a sidebar. But Val Kilmer plays Doc Holliday, and Holliday's a gambler, a drinker, a gunslinger, but he's very educated. It's kind of a dichotomy. He's living this life of debauchery and violence, but he's a really smart, introspective guy. And when he meets like one of the leaders of the gang in the movie, the Cowboys, Ringo is this gunslinger that is every bit as fast and deadly as Doc Holliday is. And but he's kind of a psycho, And when they meet, and Val Kilmer realizes he's an educated, smart, deeper guy than he would appear, he immediately dislikes him, right? And they know they're going to clash at some point. So there's a part in the movie where there's been some altercation. I forget which exact part happened, but some altercation where one of the brothers or brothers gets killed or something, or some of the cowboys is killed in this initial dust up. And Ringo's in the street, and he's like trying to goad Wyatt Earp into a gunfight because he's mad and he wants revenge. Wyatt Earp is still at the point where he doesn't want to get involved, right? So he's like, "Hey, I'm not going to fight you." But this Ringo guy keeps coming at him. And that's when Doc Holliday hears it. He's like getting his shave done. And he intervenes. He walks up, walks into the street, and he just kind of positions himself right in front of Ringo, and he says, "I'm your Huckleberry." And it's like, "I'm your Huckleberry. What the heck?" And it's kind of like saying, "Hey, I'm your buddy. I'm with you on this. I'm going to do this with you," meaning we're going to draw down and we're going to see who's the fastest gunslinger in, I forget where they were, Dodge City or whatever. No, they were in Dodge City. It was somewhere else. Tombstone, damn it. The movie was Tombstone. And that line just kind of stuck in. And after the movie came out, it was kind of top of consciousness around, "I'm your Huckleberry." And back, I guess Mark Twain, it was kind of when those books came out, and those were very popular too.
Okay, yeah, Hucked In.
Huck Finn.
Is that where Toby Keith gets the line, "I'm gonna be your Huckleberry"?
Yes, but I'm thinking he got it. I don't know. I don't want to assume anything. It might be more of a Southern known idiom.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he got it from the movie. If maybe it's a saying that they actually say, regionally.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, that's my pick.
Yeah, I guess I've never heard somebody say that. I live in the South now, but I've never heard somebody say I'm your Huckleberry. But if anyone were to say that to me, it'd probably be Hayden, and he definitely hasn't said that.
So next time, yeah.
Interesting.
So you got to find a right time to say it
Yeah.
to
Deal. I'd
Hayden.
be like, what? All right. So my character's king pick is much less in depth. Because I chose Chicken Little. Because every time I think of Chicken Little, I think of him screaming, "The sky is falling,"
Yeah.
which pretty much means the world is ending. But like idioms doesn't actually mean that. But I did not know. I only knew Chicken Little from the animated movie that came out when I was young. And it was always kind of strange to me. I didn't actually know that it was a well-known folk tale. It also can be known as Chicken Licken. Didn't know that. That's what the old folk tale's named, or Henny Penny. But in the story, an acorn falls on the head of Chicken Little, or Henny Penny, whatever you want to call her. And she takes it as a sign that the sky is falling, or the world is coming to an end. So the sky is falling can mean the world is coming to an end. And that honestly is literally the only character that popped into my head that I knew had like an idiom phrase. Yeah, that was a hard one for me because all I could think of was Chicken Little running across the screen saying, "The sky is falling."
It was a tough one this time, but that's kind of, I think that's why we pulled up the Merriam-Webster definition 3, because it kind of opened it up to include catchphrases if we wanted to go that route too.
Yeah.
Good job. The sky's falling. Chicken Little. Henny Penny. Henny Penny.
Chicken licking.
Chicken Little.
Yeah, I didn't know that was a folk tale either. I thought it was like, I mean, I literally thought it was made up when they made the animated movie when I was younger.
It's been around a while.
Yeah, I seriously didn't know that. It's kind of funny.
Hey, if anyone else has some good idiom from Hollywood or books that characters speak and are kind of known for that, let us know at the Write Note Podcast. Send us a message and we will message you back. Okay, Kira, let's talk turkey.
Haha.
Like how I did that. Yeah, okay.
So clever.
We've each selected three idioms that, for one reason or another, we'd like, and we would like to talk about what the meaning of the idiom is and the history behind it, where it came from. And I think you need to go first.
Okay, I can go first. So the first one I chose is "Let the cat out of the bag." Did you pick that one?
No, but I looked that one up because I was interested in.
That was very interesting. It means to reveal a secret carelessly or by mistake. So you could say to someone, if you're sitting next to someone and they tell your secret, you go, "Well, you just let the cat out of the bag," something like that. You get the picture. But this was funny because I normally, with some of the idioms, I could almost guess where maybe some of them came from. But this one, I would never have guessed this at all. So, where it came from is one of those kind of, "Oh, it's not clear, but it could be this, it's probably this" type situations. One suggested origin is that the phrase refers to the whip-like cat o' nine tails, which was an instrument of punishment once used on Royal Navy vessels. And the instrument was supposedly stored in a red sack, and a sailor who revealed the transgressions of another would be letting the cat out of the bag. So it would be like if you told on another sailor for doing something wrong, you would be letting the cat out of the bag because that sailor would be
Getting whipped.
punished with that whip-like
Right.
thing. I never would have guessed that. Is that what you found when you were looking it up?
No, I remember the other one, the different one.
What is that one? Because I don't have that one saved. Oh, the pig in a poke? Is
Yes,
that what you're talking about? Yes,
the
yes. Okay, I can read that one too.
pig, the bit.
Yeah. So the other one that it could have been from was pig in a poke scam, where if you're buying a pig in a sack.
And this goes back to medieval times, right?
Yeah, because why would you ever, like, it's funny reading this because I'm like, why would you ever buy a pig in a sack? Like, that's the weirdest thing. But
Because it's medieval times.
right, exactly. It goes back so far. It's just so strange. But if you're buying a pig in a sack, you would actually be sold a less valuable, which obviously less valuable. It says cat.
They would trick you. They would
They would
scam the
trick you and put a
customer.
cat in the bag
Yes, they would
instead
think
of a
it's a
pig.
pig and it was a cat. You got home, you open it,
Yeah.
and it's like, hey.
That's just so weird. Like, did that actually happen? Like, I just really doubt.
Dad did a lot of weird stuff back then.
Someone gives you a sack and you're not gonna look inside and be like, is it a pig or is it a cat? Like, for an idiom to be derived from that, don't you feel like that would have had to happen a lot?
Yeah.
That's a lot of scamming of giving you a cat instead of a pig. I thought that was very interesting.
sketchy history.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
Because, I mean,
thought
fool
that was
me
a
once, shame on me, but fool me twice with a cat instead of a pig.
okay. So it probably only worked once per customer. So
Where are you getting all the cats, though? Isn't it easier to get a pig?
they were probably overrun with feral cats in the medieval times because there was a ton of rats and mice to eat. So the cats had food.
Yeah.
To think about it, on a farm, when you have a feral cat run around the farm, next thing you know, you got 10, 15 feral cats. So I believe it. Anyway.
It's a suggestion. Not the one I would say probably works, but hey, you never know. I didn't live in medieval times. Get out of the bag. Let the cat out of the
You've just solved a mystery for a bunch of people, I'm sure.
bag. Yeah.
Okay, my first idiom is one of my favorites. It's the whole nine yards. And what the whole nine yards means, right, is giving it your all, your full measure, everything, the all of something, right? And the history, it's one of those like yours, because there's not a real definite saying, this is where it came from. The earliest written version of the whole nine yards was in it was in some Indiana newspaper in 1907, and it was an article about a baseball game. And I'll read you this line, and this is very disappointing. It says, "The regular nine is going to play the businessmen as many innings as they can stand, but we cannot promise the full nine yards." And I'm like, that cannot be the origin of my favorite idiom.
Wait, what does that mean?
I have no idea. I read it 12 times. I don't know. But see, when I heard the version of its origin differently. And this made a heck of a lot more sense to me back in World War II when the British were going up against the Luftwaffe during the Battle of Britain. And the fighters had machine guns in the wings, and the machine guns were loaded with ammunition belts. And the ammunition belts were, wait for it, 9 yards long.
That makes more sense.
See, so when a pilot would be up there and he'd be in the fight, you know, and then he'd come down, he'd tell his comrades about the fight and how he was so invested in it, you know, and he gave Jerry all he was worth. I gave him the full 9 yards, meaning he used every bullet in his 9-yard ammunition belt in the fight. And I said, that is cool, but it may not be the original origin, but I like it and I'm keeping it.
I like that one better because I don't even know what the first one means.
Nor I.
Interesting.
Number two.
Number two, my second pick is Dog Days of Summer.
Ha. I almost picked that one.
Yeah. So the Dog Days of Summer is the portion of summer known as the hottest time of the year. And contrary to popular belief, it does not derive from weather that isn't fit for a dog. Which literally is what I always thought it was. I always imagined a dog laying in a kiddie pool panting, like, this, get me out of here. But actually, the origin is really, I thought was really interesting. So the dog days refers to the 1 to 2 month interval in which a particularly bright star rises and sets with the sun, shining during the daylight hours and staying hidden at night, which happens during the hottest time of the year. The star is known by three names: Sirius, the Dog Star, and Alpha Canis Majoris. And apart from being the most prominent star in the constellation Canis Major, which is Latin for greater dog, interesting, dog days, the star is responsible for the origin of the expression dog days. And I thought that was very interesting.
I have never heard that.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. And it was interesting to me too that the star is also known as Sirius, because it made me think of Sirius Black from Harry Potter, who turns into a dog as like his, like that's the animal he turns into.
Right.
So it like all weaves together for me in my mind.
So you know what else too? Sirius XM Radio. Their logo is a dog howling, and I had no idea.
Oh my gosh, is it really?
Yes, and I had no idea why. So
Am
you
I the only
educate.
person who didn't know that Sirius meant dog?
Well, I didn't realize that either, but you educated me on the dog days because I was going to assume they had something to do with a real dog somehow. So
I thought it did too, but it's like the constellation and the sun and the one star that shows during the day during those hot months of the year. I feel like it was July and August, but I now I can't remember.
yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, feels like July and August.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was super interesting.
Excellent pick. I like that. I learned something.
I know, right?
I learned something from my daughter today. Excellent.
That's good. That's great.
Okay, my number two, second idiom. And I just like the sound of it. And it's like you don't hear it often, but it was in a James Bond song, but that Adele sings. The idiom I'm talking about is poles apart. Poles apart.
Poles?
Poles, like the poles of the earth, like the pole, like a
Oh,
pole.
poles, like North and South Pole.
Yeah. Definition, it's completely different or opposite. Like for instance, two candidates in the presidential race are poles apart in policy, right? Historically, in the early 1900s, the expression sprang up, and interestingly, during a time of industrialization and exploration, with the advent of airplanes and automobiles and all that. But geographically, the literal North and South Poles, they're very different from each other. Like the South is all like Antarctica type,
Ice.
right? And the North, I mean, the North is different, right, than the makeup of the South. And also, they are the farthest points on Earth in opposite directions. So it's a very effective expression to illustrate literal and figurative differences. Poles apart, like me and him, we're poles apart, and it paints a very vivid picture. Like I get it, North and South Pole. So yeah, I always like that one.
I like that one too. All right, my last one is learn the ropes. So the definition of learn the ropes is to learn the tricks in order to do something well. This one is one of those that you could probably guess, and I liked that. It was like predictable.
Wait, let me guess.
Yes.
Image-wise in my head, I think of a boxing ring with ropes. But then I'm also thinking of a kid jump roping. So you're gonna have to tell me what it really is.
Wrong. It comes from seafaring, where new sailors had to learn how to tie knots and manipulate ropes that make the sails move and do and go to where they had to go to make
Or
the
it's
ship
nautical
go.
rigging on a ship. That would be my third guess.
That one makes so much more sense. And it originates back to, before we had steamboats and all that kind of stuff, because that was the only way you really could sail was you had to learn the ropes to be good at it. I saw another one that it was another suggested origin, but I don't think it's true, but it referred to like theater workers. They had to learn which ropes opened which curtains, because when you're working at like a big production theater, doesn't that seem less?
It seems less complicated. Like you're not really doing much by learning those ropes, but if you learn how to put up a sail or trim your whatever.
And I feel like we had sailboats way before we had big theater, like amphitheaters, where you had all the ropes to learn about, which curtains go up and which rope does this. Like, I just feel like seafaring came first, okay? That's how I feel. And the theater world can get over it.
Maybe, right? Yeah. I mean, like maybe it took.
Yeah, you have to go fishing to eat before you put on a play. That's how I feel.
To the degree of where the rope assemblies and pulleys in a theater got to be complicated, maybe the ships came first. I don't know. That'd be interesting to look that up too.
Definitely before a boxing ring, though, I will say.
What about the jump rope?
It was a good guess, though.
Okay.
That was my third one. Learn the ropes.
Actually, learn ropes. I should have known that one. I'm very disappointed in myself.
Well,
Oh, thank you for that. So,
welcome.
my third idiom is worth your salt.
Worth your salt.
Worth your salt. And it means being capable and competent enough. It's warrant the confidence and respect that comes with the position. And I used to think
Oh
it has something to do with the salt in your body. You know how your body's like a saline solution. And that is that some people weren't even worth the salt in their body. That's how
yeah, that's
worthless they were.
terrible.
But you know why? That's the kind of thing me and Uncle Brian used to say. So we're not nice when we said that.
It's okay. You know, my brain went the total opposite and went to like the biblical side of things. Like, you are the salt of the earth, like, worth your talent or worth your.
That's actually closer to the actual meaning or the historical
Now
origin,
I'm curious.
because the phrase "worth your salt" originated during Roman times, when soldiers were sometimes paid in salt, because salt was an important preservative and a valued commodity. So receiving it as a payment, it was an important way to earn a living. And soldiers who demonstrated courage and skill in battle proved themselves worthy of their salt rations. So
Oh, that makes sense.
it makes sense. But just from a purely entertaining aspect, I like my definition better. Not worth the salt. Well, there's a song called "You Ain't Worth the Salt in My Tears," which I thought was kind of deriving from this.
Yeah, my brain just goes all the way to everything biblical, even Lot's wife when she turned into a pillar of salt.
Yeah.
I would never look at a pillar of salt and say you're not worth the salt, though, especially if it used to be a person. That's terrible. That's terrible.
It's terribly funny. Yeah. So,
Yeah.
hey, that's our show on idioms, and that was kind of fun. And maybe we'll do another one of these somewhere down the line.
There's a lot of idioms to choose from, so.
There are Googles of idioms. But yeah, so if anyone out there has their own favorite idioms that we didn't discuss or talk about, then let us know and we'll do it on the next show, maybe. Thanks for listening to The Right Note. And as we say here on the show,
Right on.
we say that and we say, keep your pen to the page and write on.
Right on. I wasn't trying to beat you to it.